Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast. As you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. I hope you guys are well. We have a very cool episode today. It is with Niko Tatarovic. He is a comedy writer and a regular on the Matt Morgan podcast. And it's a nice follow-on actually from the last episode we did. And it's also a nice follow-on from the episode I did with Patrick Willems, where we talked about Oasis biopics. Because he's also done a number of Oasis impressions over the years. And it's quite embarrassing. I talk about it in the episode, but I talked about three different ones in the last episode and didn't clock. Number one, that it was him doing all three. And number two, that he's the same guy that I've heard loads of times on the Matt Morgan podcast. So pretty silly on my behalf, but there you go. Anyway, it's a really good fun chat. Real pleasure to speak to him. As he mentions, he does have his own Patreon account, the Stupid Hearts Club, which I'm a member of. So if you want to hear more from him, then that's where you can check him out. So yeah, I'm not going to cover any news today on here. There's been a couple of bits that's happened, but I've actually recorded another episode with my good mate Joel where we discussed Fading Out. And so I covered the news in there. So that will be coming very soon after this one. But anyway, without any further Freddy ado, here we go with me and Niko.
One, two, three. Heart is free tonight. I won't sleep tonight. Love by tragedy. We're gonna be together. Stupid Hearts Club forever. Love's all in the mind.
Welcome to the Oasis Podcast, Niko Tatarovic. Thank you very much, Nick. I really appreciate you having a chat. It's such a funny situation because obviously I'd listened to Matt Morgan's podcasts and I'd sort of known that, you know, I'd heard you on there.
Yeah, and then
completely separate, I'm aware of like this sort of brilliant Funny or Die sketch that was on my like playlist of Oasis parodies for years. And then I also was aware of the All-Star Impression Show, and I was also aware of this other one that was like Liam talking about selling a big pair of scissors. And I never connected that those three, those three were all the same person. And number two, that was you from the Matt Morgan thing. So that was my mind.
Me
was
over-egging the pudding at every opportunity.
Well,
with
it's good.
The one impression I can do.
Well, you do too. You do both maybe. Brothers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, so it's, very cool. So very excited to have you on. And fucking dog just starts barking. But will that make you feel at home? Because that's normally what happens with Matt, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fine, mate. I'm used to all this.
But I mean, taking it back, you grew up in Manchester, not too far from the Gallaghers, right?
I did. I went to high school. My high school was Powers Wood. And their high school was called Barlow. And they're about half a mile from each other, probably. So, like, that their school was a school that, you know that thing between schools where occasionally there's, like, schools that have fights between them. I think, like, lads a bit older than us, there was a little bit of that going on. But generally, we all had, people had mates in both schools. But I think their school was, like, the Catholic school, if you like. And, you know, whatever, ours was just a comprehensive. But the funny thing is, and I'm sure like Oasis nerds will have heard this story, but I remember the day where there was a rumor going around. Basically, a gang of kids turned up at our school looking for Liam Gallagher, who was, you know, quote unquote, the cock of the school. So like someone wanted to fight him and they'd come, they didn't know where the school was. They came to our school and they, like some hard kid from our school went out and said, no, you're at the wrong school. Then they went off. And then when our school finished, the rumor went round that Liam Gallagher's been hit with a mallet. So have you ever heard that story?
That was apparently the magic moment that turned on to music.
Yeah, I mean, whatever that part of the legend is, I can't confirm or deny, but I genuinely remember the day. I'm pretty sure this might, I don't know if anyone else knows this, I'm pretty sure that, like, you know, like in terms of having a nickname, that in my head, they were looking for someone called Gally.
Gally.
As if that, maybe that was his nickname, but I don't know whether that's true, and I just don't know whether I've made that up or not, but that is weird, you know, like years later when seeing them, you know, in interviews and whatever, and that story come up, and I thought, fuck me, I remember that. But also it's weird because when you got to remember when they first got massive, like literally like the first couple of singles, you are hearing a ripple through people that you know.
Yeah.
Because like I've got a good, you know, quite a good friend called Claire. I think she went out with him for a bit and whatever. So at some point, obviously these were just like local kids at school.
Yeah.
And then overnight they just become the biggest thing ever.
Yeah.
You know. It were all like in guitar music for a very, very long time.
Yeah. So was it like, exciting. Oh, you know, my cousin goes to the same opticians, yeah, yeah. You know, that all sort that. Of job.
Yeah. I remember someone saying there was some pub that they drank in somewhere in between sort of Didsbury and Stockport. I forget quite what area it is. There's a pub called the Elizabeth or the Elizabethan or something like that. My mate Mark, who I was working with, he comes in on the Monday morning and goes, I was drinking in the Liz. He goes, fucking Liam Gallagher fucking came walking in, headbutted the door open and walked into the pub. Like, and he told this story on the Monday morning, like rolling his eyes, like, what a twat. But I was just like fucking brilliant. Like, you know, because you've just told me that like a pop star that I like headbutted a door open.
That is nuts.
Like, fucking great. I mean, he's obviously a loon, isn't he? But like, or was. But I love all that. But the early days, it absolutely went hand in hand with the blistering tunes, you know.
Yeah, great. Exactly. And so what about, like, you know, are you close enough, or growing up, were you close enough to, like, go to Sifter's Records and, you know, sort of in that
world? I mean, I knew where that is. I know where that is. But to quite honestly, I would say, my, you know, I can't claim to have been, like, from the cradle to the grave, like, buying cool records. I wasn't. There was an understanding of how good the Beatles was. I had the Beatles on a tape, but my fucking hell. I mean, if I got an old cassette box out and held them up, it just fucking, you know, I'd have to look at my shoes with shame. It's like shocking. But then obviously being in Manchester, we got turned onto it really by the Stone Roses.
Yeah.
And everything that went with that. So I was quite a late developer, so I couldn't go out and get served and have beer at places and whatever. But by the time I was 15, the older kids were starting to wear all this gear, and they were all going to watch the Inspirals and the Roses, and we, you know, like, you know, I can remember we all used to pile around mates' houses and whatever little bits of music you could find that had been on the telly that someone had taped, whether it was like on Granada, they might have like Tony Wilson might do like a little half hour show and show you a few bands, and you'd be finding out who they were. So yeah, like, yeah, all the you know, that little clutch of Manchester bands like James, even though I see James as a separate thing, that they got more of a student-y vibe, but they were all loved. And then, yeah, things like Northside, and then hilariously, then there was MC Hammer.
MC Hammer? He's not from Manchester.
MC Tunes. With The Only Rhyme That Bites.
Cannibal, don't like what I see through this. people and you know the rap bites. The only rap that bites.
And all right, yeah,
and then
yeah,
you know, yeah. 808, the 808 State guys had a radio show on a radio station called Sunset, and so like it wasn't like everyone was into one type of music, but we were suddenly aware that there was people in our city who were making stuff, and we were all thinking, this is fucking great, these yeah. people are from where we're from.
Yeah,
it was fucking amazing. So then that sort of died down, because then over that next few years, it, to my memory, people, kids were either becoming like grunge or like alternative, like good. If you went out on to a sort of indie night, it was more sort of grungy, studenty, in between the Stone Roses and Oasis, which I know is only really a period of about 2-3 years, but that's a long time at that age, because you go out every week.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're 15 to 17 or whatever, that's absolutely massive years, yeah.
And there was, you know, like, so you basically heard guitar music that you didn't buy by default of going to indie nights. People would be, obviously the Smiths were the thing that no one could argue was good. But when you went out to them sort of nights, it was like a bit grungy, and there was stuff like Jane's Addiction and things like that. And it wasn't really my thing. So I guess I was like, it's almost like, we'd all been into the Roses and we'd started listening to the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix and a few people that you knew were amazing. But then it hadn't really taken for me as a thing. And then when Oasis came out, and I was working with the guy that I just told you about who I worked with, he was playing some music with some people. They sounded a bit like the Cocteau Twins. And I just didn't have a clue about how music is actually made. So without a doubt, very quickly, I was like, could I borrow a guitar and you show me what a chord is? You know, like what, you know, like they made me want to know. I think it was, and I also had a mate who played the guitar, and he used to play the guitar, and I'd start singing, you know, but I was just intrigued. So what's this thing then? And then he started a band with some guy that I didn't like that much. I was a bit jealous that my mate had started a band with this other guy. So then I thought, right, I better learn to play some chords. So I thought, when I think about what was it that made that feel, oh, I want to try and copy that, I would say it was, you know, like the recordings are like quite early sort of radio sessions. And they do, the two of them would be there, Noel would be playing the guitar and Liam would be singing.
Yeah.
That is so simple.
Mm.
What they were doing, that it just felt like, oh right, fuck, that's really easy. That's not intimidating. So that's to this day is what I love most about them. And Noel, yeah. you know, this, all the getting to all the fucking arguing and the rivalries and all that. But in a weird way, I can remember seeing a few years earlier, Billy Bragg was on one of the Granada sort of music shows.
Oh yeah.
And he sang that between the wars?
Between the wars, yeah.
The miners.
Yeah, yeah.
I was a miner. I was a docker. I was a railwayman. Between the wars, I raised a family in time of austerity with sweat at the foundry. Between the wars, I paid the union, and as times got harder, I looked to the government to help the working man, but they brought prosperity down at the armory. We're arming for peace, me boys, between the wars.
And I remember just being really like knocked out that this bloke was just sat on a stool with an acoustic guitar, and he strummed a song and sang some of it, and you really heard the song.
Yeah.
And I feel like Noel doesn't get the respect for that when those songs first came out and they were doing radio stations, they were just banging those tunes out.
Yeah.
Strumming and singing. And they were solid gold stripped down. I used to listen to a really fuzzy tape of a radio session. It's my favorite tape, like, of their stuff ever.
I love that. And that's why I think you're absolutely right. And you know, I've not thought about it like that, but yeah, the confidence, you know, a lot of bands, you know, are not going to just turn up with an acoustic guitar and be like, yeah, here we go. You know, they might have to go into the Radio One Live Lounge and have everything set up and have their producers, but you know, they would just turn up at the radio station with a guitar and just bang them out. And that stuff was then, you know, so big, like with bootlegs, you know, everyone buying the bootleg CDs. And, but, you know, and there was, you'd sometimes get a bootleg CD of Blur or Ocean Colour Scene or whatever, but then the Oasis section was just like, bling, 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 you know, and everyone else was like, you know, minor. It was just amazing.
Shaker Maker on like a radio session when it was just Noel and Liam. It's just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And it made it meant you could see what a song is when you boil it down.
I'd like to be somebody else and not know where I've been. I'd like to build myself a house out of plasticine. Shake along with me.
Yeah, I got anywhere, but it was a life-changing thing because making music's become a lifelong hobby, and I was a total nerd about them for a long time, and style-wise, music-wise, all the rest of it. I feel like I kind of like at some point in the last few years, a bit of me sort of moved on a bit. Like I still fucking love them. I'll watch anything about them that comes out and all that, but I kind of got turned on to like a lot of other types of music by people that I've been knocking around with and that. And I think it's actually been a good thing. But that's actually ended up, you know, making that. I mean, what I will say is you always think, like when you listen to Liam, you always think, you know, you know that like you're allowed to listen to loads of different types of music. You could be influenced by all of it and you never know what you might come up with. But he seems very stuck in his ways with what he will listen to and what he'll say is any good. That can feel like a bit of an Oasis-y trait, if you like.
Right.
I feel like I've benefited from, as a fan, benefited from realizing that that isn't the only, you know, like the sort of, when you think about the blaggy position that they took, which is like you either do it like this or you're shit sort of thing. Like, it was really entertaining and it worked for them, but as a music fan it's not really true, is it?
No.
But it doesn't detract from the fact that all these years when any of them bring new music out and then you see that same argument underneath on, you know, like in the comments with some twat saying that, just basically trying to sell the idea that they're actually rubbish. You're just like, for fuck's sake. Like, of course the fucking not. You know, what you can't argue with is that with very simple ingredients, they made something amazing and that a lot of people felt moved by and thought was amazing. So like, still, it's still staggering to watch, you know, the documentaries and the Nebworth moments and all that sort of stuff. The fact that it got there, It literally is another era, but it, you know, it just feels like something that be really hard for that to happen again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One of the things I was going to talk to you about is obviously, you know, you've done the impressions of the two of them over the years, and like on the last episode that I did, you know, without knowing it was you, I was like, right,
yeah, clock that. That made me laugh.
Without knowing it was you, I was like, well, the Funny or Die, you know, whoever that was really good. They've absolutely nailed it. And then also on the, when I talk about All-Star Impression Show, I was like, that Stevie Ricks guy, I don't really get his Noel. You know, I can see where he's coming from, but I don't think he's quite nailed it. But then the guy that comes in, it does Liam, he absolutely nails it.
I was listening to it and obviously clocked that you actually mentioned, I think, three sketches
yeah
that I was in without and this is the headline in case anyone thinks I'm showing off. Let's be honest. Nobody has a fucking clue who I am. Right. That's fine. I've made peace with that. Right. I've been writing and working in TV for bloody, I don't know, 16, 17 years now. And nothing I've done has ever ended up being like there at the right place at the right time for me to have much of a profile.
Right.
Sort of, you know, like people in comedy have got lots, you know, like, you know, people know me in the industry, if you like, you know what I mean, as a mate and the people I've worked with and whatever, but no one's got a fucking Scooby-Doo who I am. But it's been one of my favourite things over the years. Whenever I get the opportunity and someone said, yeah, Nolan, can you do a Nolan Liam thing? And the first time I ever did that, I sort of recorded, I was ad-libbing, so it wasn't very good, but I recorded on GarageBand. Like I tried to make a Wibbling Rivalry type situation. Like I think I was trying to write a sketch, but I hadn't written any sketches yet. That wasn't my proper job yet. So I just turned the mic on and started being one of them and then would turn the mic on and be the other one. And they were, I think I was doing like a, it was almost like Stella Street. It was like,
yeah.
they were deciding whether to open a bread shop or a sausages shop or something like that. And I was just doing the voices, dicking around. And I remember listening to it, thinking, you know, quite self-consciously, I think that sounds all right. And then when you'd see people do them on a program, it always is that kind of stock rubbish over the top Manchester accent where people just go, all right. And you go, no. That is not, listen to them. That is not what they talk like. To be fair, Sean Ryder actually does talk like that.
Yeah.
Sean Ryder would sort of, here's a good story as we're, you know, I'm sharing everything that feels relevant. On my 16th birthday, because someone who worked in the pub, might have lived in a pub in Chorlton and was an Irish lad, that worked there, and he knew Sean Ryder because his daughter was going out with him at the time. When Step On got recorded, I got to see the rushes of the video.
Wow.
Like, which was, and my mates all piled around and we all watched it, and it was like amazing because it was like peak. It was like peak being a Manc at that point. And then on my 16th birthday, I remember pubs used to shut like and then open again at 7. I was outside our pub kicking a ball against the wall, and Sean Ryder got out of a car and gave me a signed copy of Step On, like the week before it came out. Fucking mega, that, isn't it?
Amazing.
And that's, he really cool. Does talk like, all right, mate, fucking hell. Yeah. And I had to stand there and get my picture taken. His girlfriend took the picture and he was like, Trish, get your tits out, mate, this lad's birthday.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
But he does that voice, the proper Manc sort of like over the top. But yeah, so it always annoyed me that whenever I saw anyone do Nolan Liam, including Hale and Pace, which you mentioned, I think that's fucking nowhere near.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the basis of me sort of trying to figure out their sort of tone, if you like.
But they've also changed over the years so much, the interview style, like when you, if you look at like the early ones, like I think the first one's like Gary Crowley, and they're both sat there and they're almost like quite timid and they're very softly spoken.
I mean, what was your reaction to signing to Creation? I mean, you know, Liam, you said you didn't really know that much about the label.
No, I didn't. But then when I found out who, you know, what was on it, I'm like, I'm not saying anything on it. It's good. Except for maybe the screaming. Oh, but I'm not saying anything, you know what I mean? Whatever. And I thought, well, yeah, it's the right kind of label for us, you know what I mean?
I mean, could you believe, so, though, that in a way that it was so easy? I mean, I'm sure there's probably a lot of, you know, people are watching this who are in bands who have been, you know, banging out the tapes to record companies for years.
It's not easy. And like people go, oh yeah, well, I'm. Someone asked me, how did we go about and get this deal? And we didn't go out anyway. It was just one of them things. And we're lucky enough that it happened. Hurrah! You know what I mean?
Anyway, can I say something now?
No.
My name's
just
Noel.
One of them things.
I write all the songs.
You know, you walk down the road, you trip over, you break your leg, and you're gutted. You know, one of them things.
Or
like
somebody breaks
what, we do a gig for four, you know, do four songs, and he comes up and takes us away. I'm after it. Oh, what a bit of star. No, but not, you know the score. I'm after it.
They've still got that arrogance, and they've still got the, you know, we're the best in the world, but they're very soft-spoken and quiet, and it's only then, like,
They obviously learned, didn't they?
Yeah.
They learned that it got them fucking headlines.
Hmm. And then, you know, a couple of years later, like, there's the brilliant bit when Noel's on TFI Friday and he's talking about Michael Jackson at the Brit Awards. And he goes, he comes over to this country, right? And I'm going to do a crap accent.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
this country, which is a classic Noel. This country, he stands on stage in a white robe. Who does he think he is? Me? You know, and you're like, that's great. You know, he's sort of, you know, and the Noel from 2 years ago.
Snatching the mantle there.
Yeah. The Noel from 2 years ago in the Adidas and the shades on wouldn't have said that, you know, but then now he's kind of sat there being exalted as, you know, the savior of rock and roll. He's got that, you know, that he was more like able to sort of, you know, just what's the word I'm thinking? Vociferate. That's not a word, is it? Yeah. But, you know, just spout forth on. Yeah. Pontificate, that's it. What did I say? Vociferate, close enough. Yeah.
Have that. That's a song. That's an album name, that.
But yeah. And then obviously Liam as well has changed over the years. It's sort of interesting how, you know, but was there anything in particular in either of them that you've like, oh, okay, you've got to nail that part of it?
Well, you know, like so that across the bits that I've done where I've done them, it feels like with Noel, the bit that people always liked was the, and that is it, right? Which I don't necessarily even know if he says it, and but I haven't seen anyone do like a little inflection that he did. Weirdly, there was one. I don't know whether I haven't listened to the whole episode yet, but did you because Alistair McGowan did in a couple of times.
Couldn't find him. Right? Couldn't find it.
It doesn't look like him. Alistair McGowan's face is like,
he's too long, isn't he?
He's got a long face. He's got a face like a cupboard full of shoes. Which just sounds like something Liam would say. But he's got a really long face, hasn't he?
Yeah.
But he did one thing where when they did, I think he tried to do the Liam thing and it was the usual snarl. But then when he was being Noel Holt doing the guitar and he just had this look. He just did this look on his face where he looked up in a certain way. And it was really good, and it was the first time I thought, yeah, someone's had a good look at them here. So I guess I had a bit of a look at them, and I would describe Liam's tone, even though he's got a reputation as an idiot, is that everything he says, he's been philosophical.
Yeah,
he's basically his the very tone of how he speaks is someone trying to be honest with you. I don't know, man. It's just like, you know, I'm just like, he's saying, oh, I don't know, for me, it's just definitely this thing and not that thing. And that's just the way I feel. And like, it's like, it just feels like his soul is just honest.
Yeah.
Whereas I think like you say, Noel has experienced that exaltation, if that's a word, as we're inventing words. And he just knows how good it's always looked. It's always worked for him to find the position where he stays above the thing.
Yeah.
And not that he never fucking praises anything, because he's obviously got, you know, like when you hear him talk about like Pink Floyd, Dave Gilmour and certain you know, obviously the Beatles and whatever. It's not like he's never respectful about anything, but he never forgets to be like, take that away from me, fuck off, you know.
Yeah.
Actually, and this is what's interesting to me, because obviously that image was perfect and it worked for them. But as we've all grown old with them, it's like they haven't, it's not like they've necessarily changed that much, but we've all grown to respect what Liam's about, because there's an honesty there. Whereas when you get to our age, if you're still saying I'm better than everything, then it starts to look almost like a bit worrying. So I think Noel's at his best when I listen to him with Matt, I think it's at his best when he's, it's almost a shock when you hear him being caring.
Yeah.
Like when Matt's talking about getting a dog and he's like, you know, saying, oh yeah, it's really cute. Yeah. Yeah. And asking stuff. You forget that he's obviously a normal bloke, isn't he? You know what I mean? But that just shows you how heavily managed their public personas are. It's kind of intriguing.
Yeah, and I think he has got that thing of he always knows, he's always on, he always knows that he as much as, and it's been a brilliant kind of addition to the world of the Oasis nerd to have these just hours and hours of Noel, you know, just talking candidly with a mate recorded, you know, because I mean, but, you know, I'm well aware that, you know, the mic is still on and he knows it's going out. I doubt he listens back to it, you know what I mean? But there is that. He you can tell that he probably knows, okay, if I call Prince Harry a fucking woke prick, that's going to be on the Daily Mail the next day, you know, like things like that, that he must know that he's, while he's not playing up to it, there is on, he's being honest, but he must know, okay, I can say this and it's going to, you know, that will get the headlines.
Yeah, they both do. I mean, slinging mud at each other on Twitter, it just, you know, it just, like, as a fan and just as a human being and as someone that's learned how to be a, you know, how to deal with conflict and fucking difficult people and whatever, like, as a, you know, in the age that we're in now, I can't help but, my therapist, not that I'm a therapist, but having done stuff like that, you can't help but look at it and go, fucking hell, guys, you know, get it together.
I like one of the things, like, going back to what you're saying about Liam's sort of honesty and this sort of kind of mystic kind of thing he almost has. It was one that it's the it's in that Oasis sketch of Funny or Die, and he's just sort of describing a song. I can't remember what you go. It's like, well, it's just like, you know, wardrobes or bag of hammers or, you know, whatever. Like,
right, it's just like fucking, what is it? It's like making a sandwich with your face. Something like that, isn't it?
It's like fucking jammy dodgers, isn't it? You know what I mean? Or like stepladders or whatever. It's just, it's either there or it's not. Fucking, it's not like these whiny fucking student shitheads with pianos.
And you're like, he's never said that.
Well, he was coming out with some crackers, you know, probably in the years leading up to that. There was one interview, I've got a feeling it was GQ. This is how much of a nerd I am. I can remember just loving whenever there was an interview with him in any magazine, I would buy it, right? So those quotes would be in there. And he definitely said, he would be embarrassed about this now, but he called George Harrison a sweaty old mushroom. And I think he had a bit of a beef with George Harrison's son at the time. And he said, I'll play golf on his head. Not like I'll hit him with a golf club, but I'll play golf on his head. And that was it for me. Like, from then, it was like Liam was always going to be the one that's going to, he's actually going to say something quite mad and interesting.
It is just amazing, isn't it? Like, just the stuff he comes out with. You're like, where the hell did that even come from? You know, and a comedy writer like yourself, I imagine, would come up with, like, you know, you could have to sit there and work at something like that and think, oh, that would be, you know, workshop 10 different things. But he just, you know.
Well, across those sketches that you've seen, or I've ended up in them, they've all come from different places. So Funny or Die, basically, like, Funny or Die was massive in America. It's Will Ferrell and all them.
Yeah.
And then they said, we want an English office. So a bunch of people that were my mates got to open that up. But as it, no one ever cracked the online comedy thing, like as an entity in this right. country, no one ever manages to nail it down. But for a couple of years, there was a budget there that meant if you came in with a good idea, they'd sort it out and you'd get to shoot it. So we all had a lot of fun during the brief period where Funny or Die UK existed. And some of the main contributors were three lads called the Dawson Brothers, who were massive Oasis fans. And they wrote the sketch and asked me to be in it because I'd done the impression for him. But I was like, you've got to let me have a tweak. But it was there, all the, like, you know, the funny music in that sketch, like, basically the joke was they're just saying we're just doing what we've always done, but the joke was that they've made
drum and bass, like, or whatever,
mad fucking music that doesn't suit them. So like that was their sketch, but they let me put the stupid words in Liam's mouth and come up with the little Noel bits.
You know, at the end of the day, it's just an Oasis record, right? And that is it.
Talking on me reefer, chilling in me mind. Feel the reggae rhythm, it's rolling down me spine. Maybe on the run, but no man gives me slack. I can't keep me cool with the policeman on me back. Something like that, you know what I mean?
End of day, right? Like, people are going to say that we've tried to be, like, more experimental, like, on this new record, right? But, like, we're just fucking having it, like we always do, you know what I mean? And that is it.
Oasis 08. Tickets tonight. 8 days a week. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
But with that, that's a very strange story. That I have to say, with Stevie Ricks, when I met him, I think for the first time doing that. So then I went off and sort of had a look at all his other stuff. And actually, like, if you look at his old sort of like world that he's got on YouTube, I think he's still going. He's probably made a decent living and he's fucking really committed. And he's definitely done some really good stuff across lots of people, including Oasis. Definitely. But that sketch was an odd one because it sort of pitched two slightly different styles in the same sketch. And someone else wrote it. That was a mate of mine wrote that. That show, I think the point of that show was someone had won Britain's Got Talent, who did impressions, and they wanted to give him a show. But how do you sustain that? So they came up with an idea of having him in it a lot, but they'd have celebs doing impressions. And it went out on Boxing Day, right, on ITV. It was massive. I mean, it got absolutely panned. It's quite funny, really, because it was like really excited, thinking, "Fucking hell, I'm Christmas telly," and it was like, it was the maddest thing, right? So when we were at the record for that, like, you feel all fancy if you get booked for an acting job, because you might get picked up from your house in like a nice cab and driven to a studio and given a dressing room and all that shit. And but it was really weird because they had a high turnover of people all doing their bit, right? So basically there was loads of famous people walking around. I was the only person on that show no one had ever heard of. But loads of famous people walking around dressed as other famous people. It was fucking weird, right? And I was, when they put the wig on you and that in makeup, I realised that I was sat next to Bobby Davro, right? And on the other side of me was Les Dennis, right? Bobby Davro had his top off, and Les Dennis and Bobby Davro were chatting over me, having a conversation about like the old days. And I was just sat in the middle going, what the fuck is going on? And then, right, Jerry Hall, the real Jerry Hall, came walking in, dressed as Jordan, carrying a beef curry on a paper plate. Beat that. I was just like, what the fuck is this? And anyway, so we filmed the sketch, you know, bless him, bloody Stephen Mulhern trying to be Jeremy Kyle. He's not a comedian. Why is he in a comedy?
No.
Like, whatever.
Now let's hear what his younger brother has got to say. Please welcome to my stage, Liam.
Never drank your Tizer, man. I never drank your Tizer. That was my Tizer. I've got a receipt from Morrison's and everything, but the f***ing dog get it.
Yeah. Sit down.
No one tells me when to sit down, mate.
Sit down now. Sit up straight.
It's my Tizer.
Shut your gob.
I never drank your Tizer.
Shut your gob.
I never drank your f***ing Tizer.
You do not buy Tizer, you know what I mean? You buy that cheap supermarket brand, 20 pence a litre, cherry-flavoured pop, and then you drink my Tizer.
I only started drinking Tizer because I drink it anyway. You always wanted to be me. He just wants to be me.
Don't think so.
Oh, I think you want to be me.
Don't think so.
Think you want to be me.
Don't think so.
Think you want to be me.
Don't think so. Right, that's enough. We asked Liam if he was stealing his brother's Tizer and drinking it straight from the bottle. Liam said he was not. The lie detector test reveals Liam was telling the truth, everybody.
Told you. I told you. I drink your dandelion and burdock, you killed. Yeah? All right, see you later.
The Gallagher brothers there with someone pretending to be Jeremy Kyle. Now, I like Liam and I like Noel. But which is better?
There's only one way to find out.
But, I mean, just funny stories, you know. Right? And Very Important People was the Channel 4 show. That's the one that had the mega scissors and the traffic cone and all that. Like Car Lighthouse, that was it. I think there was three of them, and I can't remember what the third one was, but it was like it was like a quickie idea, Liam's Inventions, and so he sat in an armchair like he was in the Live Forever documentary,
the 2003 one.
So what's all this about? You've got new inventions, and again he's playing it down and just being like, I don't know, man, just like came to me, you know what I mean? Just like I was just like in a car park, couldn't find my car, and I just think like, you know, could do with like a fucking Car Lighthouse or something. So just fucking stuck a fucking light on an adhesive cone. You know, so just really silly. But that was the most fun show, because Very Important People was a whole impressions sketch show that we wrote. That's where I met Matt Morgan, in fact. He wrote lots of that.
Oh, right, okay.
And they had Morgana in it. So like Morgana and Terry Minot were the main two. But a handful of other people got to do one or two people. So, that was like a lovely... That was a top buzz at the time.
And one of the things I mentioned on the episode, when I talked about that one, not knowing it was you, was the fact that years later, then Noel Gallagher gets associated with scissors, you know, and yet you would put Liam Gallagher with scissors, like, you know, the 10 years before Noel was then, you know, famously had a scissor player on stage with him.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? Yeah.
What are they? Liam Gallagher's fucking mega scissors. Cut through anything, man. Doing well. Pleased with them, you know what I mean?
Aren't they just big scissors?
Nah, I'm not having that, man. They're not just bigger. I mean, they're heavier, sharper. You know what I mean? It'd take your fucking head off these.
What are they for?
What do you mean, what are they for? Do what you want with them, not bothered. Cut a chicken in half. Take the end off your shoes, cut a giant's hair, not arsed. Happy days.
It just reminded me, thinking of that show, right? So like now and again, every week there was one bit where he did a topical bit because something had happened in the news. And it was the week City won the league, which I'm a Man United fan, so I was devastated. But the next day, the guys phone me and say, look, City have won the league. Can we do something with Liam or Noel? Do Liam. So he said, we'll just sit you next to a mixing desk, blah, 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 whatever. And I went, right, no, I'm going to write a song. So I went off and wrote a song called Abu Dhabi Do, because the Man City are owned by people from Abu Dhabi. And so like 2 days later, we're in a music studio and I'm all like parkered up with my wig on again, fucking singing this song. And they did a little interview. That was a real buzz. But I had to wear a City scarf. You know, like the week that they'd won the league, had to wear a City scarf.
Abu Dhabi shine, Abu Dhabi shine. And now I'm glad that Etihad can fly me to an Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi till.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
But that went out, right? And the next a few days later, whatever, Matt Morgan texted me or emailed me and said, Noel said he fucking really, really made him laugh. He said it was spot on. And he said, the comment he made was, typical BDI. Which I was just like, God, leave, give it a rest. It's like, he's just like, even then he's having a dig at his brother, you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, it did sound a bit like BDI, to be fair. That is a really good song. And I really like the song, the Songbird parody.
Because
when they're saying, like, you know, no, like, you know, it's just rock and roll, man. Like, it's what, whatever, you know.
Is it about feelings? No, it's not about, like, feelings or anything like that. You know,
it's not like love and stuff. That's, you know, that's, you know, you can't say, that's gay. But, you know, back in the day, you'd say, oh,
exactly. I know, like, exactly. It was blokey, wasn't it? You know,
But this is the point I made in the episode as well. When Liam writes songs, they don't tend to be, I mean, Greedy Soul, I suppose, has got a bit of it about it, but most of Liam's own songs are really sweet, you know, they're love songs,
very thoughtful,
you know,
they definitely are.
And you'd think it wouldn't be the case, you know, because, you know, typically you'd think, oh, if he's going to do his own album, it'll be punk rock and it'll be, you know, just all snarling, kind of aggressive. But no, when he sits down with an acoustic guitar, it does tend to be love songs. And I think you've nailed that, actually, like that thing of like,
and actually, even though it's not like Noel's lyrics are famously sentimental. Of course they're not. They're more fun words, aren't they? They're more like memorable phrases and words. And people knock his lyric writing sometimes, but I don't think you can knock lyrics that you just instantly know what they are the next time you sing it. So, like, I think his lyrics are good, but they do a specific type of a job. But and we see, like, Noel wrote Talk Tonight and all sorts of lovely ballads, sad song, and, you know, there's a lot of certain amount of vulnerability in Noel's lyrics, but you interview him, you're getting zero vulnerability. And that's always made me think, must be the case, I guess, with a lot of any sort of laddie or rock and rolly bands, is that when that person, as an amateur songwriter myself, you know, when you're on your own, you're getting that stuff out. It's a way of channeling it, you know, and them two have very clearly never found, if you like, the kind of the warm and cuddly, modern, touchy-feely way of channeling your feelings. So, like, doing it through music is classic, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is. But yeah, that point of like, no, of course it's not a love song. You know, of course not. It's just whatever. And then it's like, oh, I really love you, Nicole, not Appleton. You know,
I've got to say that's the Dawson Brothers. That's quality right in that. Yeah. It used to be in. What was it? What was the first?
It used
bit?
To be in a girl band. Really? Not All Saints.
Yeah. It wasn't All Saints.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Like, he's trying to sort of make, trying to, like, deflect.
I kid you, right? He's written this song called Nicole, right? And it kills me to say it, right? But it is fucking mega, right? And that is it. It's not about nothing, man, you know what I mean? People get given it's about, like, you know, my wife or whatever, right? But I'm not one of these pansy boys sitting around writing tunes about my wife, you know what I mean? It's just a song about me, haven't it, with a fucking bird, you know what I mean? Like, called Nicole. Next question.
Oh, I really love you, Nicole. Not Appleton. You used to be in an old girl band. It wasn't All Saints.
Not hard, is it, writing songs? It's like making a sandwich with your face, isn't it? Bit of bacon. You know what I mean? Have a bit of cold fish, bit of cress. Yellow pickle, brown pickle. It don't matter. Because I am the bollocks. At making sandwiches. At the end of the day, right, that is it.
What is it?
Well, at the end of the day, right, that is it.
But it is happy just days. To have nailed that.
Long time ago, like, I have to say, the closest I got to, like, right, so, like, did a few of them little bits, right? And then it was like, oh, this is good. Like, can we get someone? Because obviously we're in there with TV channels. This is what you do, is you go and visit someone at a TV channel who likes something you've done, and you go, hey, what if we did this? And then you try and convince them to give you money to do something bigger. So on the back of doing all these little Oasis bits, suddenly, obviously, you got the Stone Roses reunion, and they did the press conference and all the rest of it. So I thought, hang on a minute. You know, there's a date now in the diary where their comeback gigs, and they're going to be massive. The music press, they're going to be huge. So I went to Channel 4 and I showed them my Oasis bits and I said, look, Stone Roses reunion is next year. Will you give us some money to do what I wanted it to be, was like a half hour or hour special that they'd put on. And it's like on the weekend of the Stone Roses gigs, in my imagination, one of the channels would be going, it's Manchester night. Because sometimes you'd have them theme nights, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
BBC Two or Channel Four or whatever, they do a theme. So to be fair, the comedy commissioner, bloke called Shane, was great and was like, right, here's a little bit of money, go make a taster tape. So we had a small budget, and you've got like one day to try and make as much shit as you can to show the big bosses. So that's how that one that you've seen came about. There's a tape called The Second Coming, where we did a mini cheap pilot of what would be a full Stone Roses joke documentary.
Yeah.
And obviously the whole point of that was to get lots of other characters in it. So we had an amazing cast with Tony Way and Lucy Montgomery playing Bez and Sean. Peter Serafinovich did Morrissey and Simon Cowell.
How did that come about?
Adil Akhtar.
Now absolutely was Rennie. Massive. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just like everyone, you know, like other people who were working on it, knowing them and whatever. I don't really know. I know Peter to say hello to, but James was producing it, and that's his brother. So it's all, when you do a taster tape, it's kind of like you're asking people to sort of do you a favor and do something for cheap or free, because if we get to make the real thing, it'll be awesome. That was a great day. And Dan Rent and Skinner, obviously, who's fucking brilliant as John Squire, because if there's a very famous old Stone Roses interview, which is, I think, you know, that one that you put a clip up in your show of Bob Odenkirk and David Cross trying to do.
I don't know. Yeah.
Moody. So like there's a really old, there's an interview with Ian Brown and John Squire, and it's like on Granada TV with a woman, I think she's called Lucy Meacock or Lucy Peacock, I can't remember. And she's asking him questions, right? And it looks like detention, because she's asking him a question and they're just sort of like looking at the floor, half smirking. and then one of them would go, I don't know. Like, it was almost like Little Britain before its time. But to be a teenager and see a group go on a telly and then go, hey, so where'd you get your influence on? It's like just like ignoring her. It was like amazing. Like that they were allowed to be naughty like that. We thought it was amazing, but obviously they look, now as an adult, they look absolutely ridiculous.
What's the best thing that anybody's ever said about the band then?
John? Ian? Don't know.
We're not that interested in the band, really, to tell you the truth.
But Dan Rent and Skinner nailed John Squire.
Yeah, I love it. I love that.
It's still out there on YouTube somewhere, Second Coming.
That I managed to find as well. And I'll definitely put a link in and drop a clip in here. But like when they're in like the chicken shop, because it was, that's like, oh, this used to be our studio. And, I can't remember the lines now, but it was like, oh, yeah, it's good that, you know, it can now be a chicken shop because, you know, we fed the people with music and now they're feeding the people with chicken. Yeah. And, you know, and another thing about...
So he says something, I can just remember there being a line where he says something's got, now it's the same as it was, but now with a very heavy chicken bias.
I think it's a beautiful thing that the space we use to perfect our sound is now feeding the hungry with peri-peri chicken at very reasonable prices. Plus, bottomless drinks.
Yeah, it's ironic, because when this was a studio, we used to argue about what takeaway we were going to have, but now there's a very heavy chicken bias. Just makes you think what we could have achieved if we'd have been as focused as Chicken Shack.
That was a really fun day, and I was dead excited, and I was hoping that we'd get to make the real thing, but unfortunately, the higher-ups at Channel 4 were like, who cares about the Stone Roses? I was like, no!
Everyone
And really, so then after that, it was like... It's an itch I've never fully scratched. So Tony Way, who plays Sean Ryder, in the Stone Roses tape. Me and him are big Oasis heads, and that we were always the ones who said, let's see if we could convince someone to let us make. I still to this day would love to make the definitive Oasis spoof that's got like. That where there's time to tell a proper story, like a
like the Ruttles film.
Yeah, but, exactly right.
Yeah.
It's to my great regret that we did not get there. And I sometimes think, you know, there's obviously what happens is every few years you get another anniversary, and you think, well, we could just do it and tie it to that. But I feel a bit self conscious that I'm like. It's like, yeah, we get it, mate. You like doing Oasis impressions, you know. But at the same time, I think they are a band that deserves, you know, the companion piece to any great band is that it's all those little funny little corners of being a fan of them, isn't it? Like the Ruttles is amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And what's interesting, a couple of episodes ago, I was talking to a YouTuber called Patrick Willems, and he does lots of like, you know, movie commentary sort of stuff. And he's a massive Oasis fan. And he was talking about music bios and how they just follow the same old formula and they're just crap. You know, you can basically go, they follow exactly the same formula every single time. And in one of his videos, he used Oasis as an example of like, okay, if I was going to do an Oasis biopic, I would just focus on this period, like the BNL period. Just focus on that. Right, Don't worry about trying to do them. Oh, there's Liam on the playground getting whacked on the head, or
Oh God, yeah. I think you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that would just be a parody completely, and it would just be so quick.
Biopics are really hard, aren't they?
Yeah. Whereas I think biopics are really hard.
I thought Walk the Line was good.
Yeah.
Walk the Line, the movie about Johnny Cash, was good. It's pretty rare that a biopic is. I don't know. It's like you say, like a good example of what you're saying is, I don't even know if I've seen this, but have you seen Nowhere Boy, the sort of young John Lennon?
The John Lennon one, yeah.
You know what? I've not seen that, but there's quite a few about the Beatles, isn't there? And you just always get that cringy moment where it's like, what did you just say? And then they sing the song. It's like,
well, the worst is Bohemian Rhapsody. Did you always see Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen one?
I did actually. I thought the music. Part of it they did really well.
I thought
the Live Aid stuff was my little boy who was only about 9 or 10 then, having showed no interest in music, the same thing happened to him that happened to me when I first saw Freddie Mercury. Is he was like, what the fuck is this? And suddenly he's running around the house in his pajama top and a vest. I really respect Queen, and I think they're amazing. But you can only take so much, in my opinion. And he did 6 months on Queen after that. I was like, come on, mate.
There's various scenes where it's like, hey guys, let's all stomp our feet. Oh yeah, let's clap. Oh great, and then it's like transition to We Will Rock You, and you're like, oh God, you know.
Yeah, it's sort of odd, isn't it, that people think that you need to see how a song was born.
Mm.
It's like, because there's. You know, there's only really one way a song gets born, like dicking around with music. It's like, and the only time that's ever been interesting and was just like unbelievably magical was Get Back.
Yeah.
Because it was real.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, I couldn't believe what I was witnessing, seeing those songs being born. Like that, and again, that's not the first time that that's been done. It was have you ever seen the Sympathy for the Devil film?
No.
Right, so it got given away. You know, that used to give away a DVD or a CD with a newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I've still got it because it is amazing. But as a piece of film, it's really hard to watch because it's all like arty. Right. What it is it's pieces of like poetic. Weird political filmmaking for a few minutes with actors and that doing all this weird, like almost like Black Panther-esque dialogue and in poem form. It's like performance art, but then they go back in the studio, so they just use that to pad out a weekend where I don't know if it's a weekend or a week where that'd be a weekend where the Stones are playing Sympathy for the Devil until it's got its groove that we now associate with it, and seeing that's amazing as well. But it's slightly more of a, you know, it's not got the modern editing kind of luxury of the kind of modern eye on it.
Yeah, well, that was the amazing thing about that Get Back, wasn't it? It just looked like it could have been shot yesterday. And the fact that the Beatles were so cool and like their outfits and their haircuts are so timeless. And then it's only when you go out on the street and they're interviewing the old chaps in boiler hats and it's like, oh yeah, shit, it is 50 years ago, you know? But when the Beatles were in, that could be yesterday. That was amazing.
Yeah, it was great.
I loved it.
Really, really. And the thing is, I just love the fact that for that couple of weeks, I felt like the whole world was talking about them again.
Yeah,
I loved it, and like I said, as an amateur music person, without a doubt, it's really weird because you know you're never going to touch anything they ever did, but seeing them being so playful while they were making music made me all excited to sort of dick around with people again, and I've been making loads of music because Paul McCartney's infectious enthusiasm for just playing around, it's like you can't argue with that, you know, whether it just as a hobby or good, it's just even like for mental health, it's a good music's the best escape.
Absolutely.
To just keep your head busy and do something, you know, it's fucking great.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's some of my favorite times. I was in a band as a teenager and just coming up with songs and, you know, someone would come in with a part and just like, oh, you know, it is the best thing ever, isn't it? No, that's fantastic.
But at our age, you can do all that without the where are we trying to get to bullshit, because obviously only happens to a few lucky people. But
well, I still think, because, you know, I know Alan McGee a little bit through the pod and but like 16-year-old me is like, you dickhead, send him a demo like that. And I'm like, no, it's Alan, who I've interviewed a few times and like is a good is a good fella. That would just be the worst thing ever if I did that, you know? So, but I mean, do you, you know, with you being sort of really good mates with Matt and Matt being really good mates with Noel, has that, have you met Noel? If you've
come no, on? No, not yet anyway, but at the moment it's almost like, yeah, I think I made a reference to it. I've got a little podcast of my own, which I call Stupid Hearts Club, if anyone's interested. It's on Patreon. And I'm also on Instagram at Stupid Hearts Club. And we'll be sharing clips of podcast, music that I'm doing, all bits and pieces, because I'm just like on a little bit of a fun mission at the moment. But I've only ended up starting a podcast because I'm mates with Matt. And during lockdown, we were all miserable. And he needed to know he could deliver a show. And we did one and really got on. And his patrons were very, very kind about us two dicking around. So he kept asking me back. And then he was like, well, start your own, because some of these will come over. And I was like, yeah, I don't doubt it. So I've got a small but lovely audience on Patreon. But it is quite strange. I mean, obviously, they were literally like the band of my lifetime. And he's basically like chatting to Noel every other two or three episodes, or every two, three, four episodes. And sometimes he'll be talking to me around about the same, you know, once a month or something like that sometimes. And it feels a little bit like Matt's like Checkpoint Charlie. And I'm like shitty East Berlin guest. Decadent Berlin guest, like, yeah.
But couldn't you just like engineer a, like, oh yeah, I'll just pop over on Tuesday. Well, oh, it happens to be the same day that, you know, or are you just going to just leave
you just,
it?
You just can't do it like that, can you? Like, if the time ever comes where there's a reason where he's having a beer in town or whatever, then obviously wouldn't say no. But yeah, you've got to be not weird about it. I mean, to be fair, like I said, I've been working in TV for 15, 16 years. And that being famous people, it becomes a very different thing in your head when you've been around them.
Yeah.
It's odd. It's actually quite odd. I don't think fame's a very good thing, to be honest, for anyone.
No. No. You know what I mean? I suppose you'd be quite, like, you know, most famous people that you've met, you'd just be quite chill about, because, you know, it's not a big deal. But then, is Noel still Noel?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think, even hearing interviews with him, met everyone, and there'll be some story where they've gone somewhere and they've bumped into someone that it's just mind-blowing, you know. People would say that about like Bowie or, you know, McCartney. Actually, have you ever bumped in, who's the biggest famous people you've ever gone, you're in the street and there they are? Because my best two are, I have seen Liam, but I've seen Mike, Eric Idle, which blew me away.
Oh, wow.
And he gave me a thumbs up. And I actually did once see Paul McCartney on Soho Square. And my face went like, I didn't even get to the point of saying hello, but he did a little head wobble and went, all right. By the way, Stevie Ricks, who we mentioned before, who was in one of the sketches. If you Google Stevie Ricks, Paul McCartney, Gary Barlow, that is very, very funny.
Cool. Okay.
It's Gary Barlow phoning Paul McCartney, trying to get him to get involved with something. His Gary Barlow is unbelievable. I mean, his Macca's good as well, but he is very talented, actually, Stevie Ricks. So, like,
cool. Okay.
Go and have a look at all of his stuff. He's a good lad.
Gary, it's me, Paul. Come on.
Sir Paul!
That's the one! That's the one!
You look absolutely fantastic!
Magical Mystery Tour jumper!
Absolutely amazing!
Bit of nostalgia, you know.
Thank you so much, Sir Paul!
Beautiful!
For coming along here today.
Yeah.
To the crooner sessions.
It's
absolutely brilliant.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Nice to be here, man. Yeah, you're looking well. You're looking really good, man. You know. Yeah, nice.
Do you fancy doing a song, Sir Paul?
I'd love to, you know. Let's do something. I can see what you had for your breakfast there. Come on,
do you
let's
fancy
do it.
Doing Blackbird, Sir Paul?
Let's do
That'll
it, man.
That would be absolutely fantastic.
Well, yeah.
I did, going back to your question, I did meet, and there's a couple of people I don't think I've mentioned on here that I've met or I've seen in the wild. And I was going down, I was near Harrods. I think I was going into Harrods. And I saw Bill Nighy walking down the street. Oh, I'm like, that's got to be Bill Nighy. And he, at one point, he sort of like stopped and turned and looked quizzical. And I'm like, yeah, that's definitely, but that was the nailed on Bill Nighy look.
Just giving it Nighy wherever he goes.
And and twice my missus has taken a piss out of me so much for this. So once I saw, I was watching The Charlatans or Richard Ashcroft, and James from Star Sailor was in the audience and just down from me. And I wandered over to him. I was like, mate, I was a bit pissed. I was like, oh, you're a real breath of fresh air. And he was like, all right, cheers, like that. And then I go, oh, breath of fresh air. So that's lived with me for a while. And then I saw Goldie Looking Chain, you know, the Welsh. Who I absolutely love, Goldie Looking Chain. But we were on the train.
Yeah, they were great.
I love them. They still do brilliant stuff now. It's so funny. But I was on the train because where I live is on the sort of the Great Western Line from sort of Cardiff down to London. And it was when Maggot was on Celebrity Big Brother. and they were going down on the train down to see him. And I think I was just coming from work or on a night out or something on the same line. And I went over and chatted to them and I said the same thing. Oh, you guys were a breath of fresh air. And they're like, all right, cheers.
That's your stock.
That's my go-to
celeb compliment.
Yeah. And but then it was like, what did you say to them? So they were a breath of fresh air. It's like, oh, Christ, you dickhead. But
All right. At least you've been polite.
Yeah. But it's been very weird. It's been very weird meeting some Oasis people. Like, I met Tony McCarroll because we've done a couple of live things. I've met McGee and I've not met Cannon in person. No, but yeah, so that was a real big deal for me, obviously meeting McCarroll and McGee. Awesome. But it is.
I did an acoustic gig at the big when was it? When the restrictions relaxed a few weeks ago, literally that week, some bloke I know that runs a nice little night for like an acoustic night at a fancy little club gave us a gig, and James Walsh was on.
Oh yeah.
I think I'd met him because I've got a mate who made a few little indie films in Wales, a lad called Jamie Adams, and James has done some music for him. So during lockdown, when everyone had Zoom quizzes, he said, right, who's up for a Zoom quiz? I went, yeah, all right. And James was on that. So I ended up sort of like, I don't know him, but I'm actually quite chatty with James.
Oh, yeah.
And he's out there doing his stuff. Like, he's got solo stuff that's a bit more stripped down than what he does with Star Sailor. And he was last on this gig a few weeks ago. And even though, like, I totally respect Star Sailor, and in my dreams, my band that was probably in the same ilk. We were trying to be Doves or Supergrass, I think, when I was in a band, and we didn't really fucking try too hard, but never got anywhere near. I mean, it would have been the dream to have that happen. Mm. What happened to Star Sailor? They did really well, but I also don't put them in my main fucking like top band sort of thing, if you know what I mean, without being rude. But then, so he got up and did his set, did some of his stuff, and then when he did the some Star Sailor songs, but actually seeing him play them, he was fucking shit hot, quite honestly. He was really, really good, and it is good to see, like, on a night the other people were very good as well, but I was the oldest one. Me and James are like the oldies. Like, there's a couple of younger acts on who were really good, who got managers and all the rest of it. It was like, you can see when he got up, you can see that he's a pro, you know, like, he's really fucking good.
I guess you had a heavy night, so much on your mind, watched you fall to pieces. I will try to help you through, life can be unkind when you're at your weakest. watch it float on in when you're on a train and the little things fall into place. It'll take a while till we find our way, but everything will be okay.
So yeah, it's a funny thing, like this whole thing where these bands all slag, you know, especially Oasis, slagging everyone off. And then you go, yeah, they're shit. And I've got a bit of a thing about musical snobbery in a way, like in the real world, like exactly what you just described. If you sort of meet someone from some band that you've sort of dismissed, if you ended up going to your mate's house for a roast dinner and they were there and they told you that's who they were and that's what they'd done, not one bit of you would be like, that shit. You'd be like, fucking, that's amazing, well done. You know, yeah. And like, you know, obviously we're all allowed to have an opinion, but I just think over the years, I think it's kinder to be a bit live and let live with everyone's choices in music and that.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And it's, as I said, it's easy enough for you know, especially bands coming up. And I do miss that, that I don't think bands, I think in the current kind of climate of everyone sort of wanting to be super nice and caring and things, I get that, and that is a better way to be in the world. But I do wish a band would come through like Oasis and just say, like Noel famously said, like, bring me the head of Phil Collins, you know, someone should just come through and say, why the hell is, you know, Liam Gallagher still on the Brit Awards, you know, get him, he's old, yeah, he's past it, we're the new thing, you know.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's who's got the bollocks to come along and say, you know, I still think that they come across as in their own way relevant when they do stuff, right? But obviously, theoretically, they are now the old guard, where when they came out, it was Sting, Mark Knopfler, Level 42, all those people were seen as mature virtuosos who mastered their craft. But as a teenager or someone in your early 20s, you look to them and like, what the fuck's that?
Mm.
What's amazing about Liam is he still has young people getting into him. That's kind of, that I don't reckon Noel has the same.
No.
In the same way. I find that amazing.
Yeah. No, it is. It is.
So
it
that,
is.
That must say something about his aura.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyone that's got that kind of, like we're saying, almost mystical kind of just ridiculous confidence and coolness. But like, and like you were saying earlier, when we were saying about meeting famous people, it's funny that even when you're listening to people like, I think it might have been Dave Grohl or Taylor Hawkins saying about meeting Liam and it being such a big deal for them to meet Liam. Foo Fighters have, you know, sold more records or whatever than Oasis ever did, you know, but that, and Brandon Flowers has done the same as well, you know. They're like, I met Liam, and it's such a big deal for them, you know.
Yeah, because he created such a big character.
Yeah,
and that actually is what makes them. This is the thing, is that they're not, as someone that you can do an impression of, it's quite handy that someone is sort of, they're never in fashion, but they never go away and they're always box office.
Yeah, I suppose if you've nailed your impression of like Neil Kinnock, then but you know, you don't really need that impression anymore.
Well, that's it, like, because I work, obviously work in that business, and I've worked on shows like Spitting Image and all the rest of it, and we always have a good laugh. Like when you're sort of reaching for like, oh, I could do this impression, it's like my mates know that all the impressions, me and Matt sometimes have dicked around with it in the, maybe about a year ago on his podcast, trying to see what impressions we could both do to see what all the patrons thought and all that. And the funniest thing about them is how fucking out of date they are, really, you know. Because you've learned, you've not thought about it like for years, and but you'd be doing like Ronnie Corbett, you know what I mean? Like,
well, it's funny because I think impressions were such a big thing on TV for so long that, like in the 80s and 90s, there was always an impression show on TV, and so everyone could do the Michael Crawford and the you know, and there was every all of those on Michael Caine or whatever. Whereas it was funny, I was listening to a podcast a few years ago and someone was doing like Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson and people like that. And you're like, oh yeah, I've just been so out of the loop of impressions that a whole generation of people have been passed by without being impressioned. You know what I mean?
It's still out there. You know, I've worked on quite a lot of shows over the years that where they're trying to find, I'm working on one literally at the moment where someone's come up with an angle, using, I don't know if I should say, because I'm not allowed to talk about things that haven't come out yet. But yeah, people come up with formats, different formats. Some work, some don't. I mean, another one that probably the most fun show I've worked on and did a lot of work on, and I didn't do any impressions on it, but I was like a hapless copper, Sid Lowcroft, in a thing called Murder in Successville with Tom Davis. And the thing on that was lots of impressionists doing impressions of someone in a sort of weird universe where they lived in a town that was a little bit like Sin City or something like that. So we got to see all like Luke Kempner and Kevin Bishop, worked with him, you know, did his show years ago as a writer. So, you know, there's always new people coming through, and it's always amazing when you see or hear, you know, a very accurate impression, but the challenge is always, how do you present that in a way that's new and interesting? And
yeah,
it's a hard one, but.
Because just copying is just copying, isn't it? I think what the great people have done it in the past have done is, like you're saying, it's not a complete caricature, but it's nailing the like you said about Alistair McGowan, the little look. And Matt Ford, I dropped a clip of him in the thing.
I really like that impression.
Yeah, that you can do.
That will does not. I will not be able to not think of that whenever if anyone says, "Oh, you do Noel," I look the way. What is it he said? The beginning of that thing, he goes, "I don't buy CDs anymore." Right. Now, I know Matt and I work with him on Spitting Image, and I know what his normal voice sounds like. I was listening to that. I was like, fuck, that was really
the
tone. I thought the tone was brilliant on that.
Yeah. And the thing about like, he'll put his hand to his head, and there's a lot of like, and then look you right in the face, you know,
looking up and thinking. That's the other one that Noel does. Before he speaks, he looks up there. And then says what he's
and then delivers it saying. Straight to your face. You know.
Yeah, Matt Ford's, he's a talented guy and a nice and a lovely guy.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, look, Nico, it's been absolutely brilliant to talk to you today, mate. Really appreciate it.
Same to you, mate.
So what was tell us about the podcast again and the Patreon for that.
Right. Well, for my sins, I've got my own little podcast, which I've just renamed Stupid Hearts Club, which is also my music name. So I'm basically going to age disgracefully, still recording and playing music. And I just decided to call it that. Stupid Hearts Club is kind of a reference to being a hopeless romantic, but also having a stupid heart is also dicking around.
Yeah.
And just having a silly sense of humor. So I usually have comedy writer type people on and have a chat with them, but I am broadening it out a bit, so maybe you could come on my podcast.
I'd love to, mate.
In return at some point, and then you can tell us all about the Oasis podcast, because obviously a lot of Oasis fans, I'm basically got the tail end of Matt's fans who are the tail end of Noel's fans, and so like I think sort of Oasis fans are part of the mix without a doubt, so it'd be good. Yeah, you should come on and have a chat.
Oh, I'd love to. Absolutely love to. Yeah, it'd be brilliant. Cool. All right. Well, brilliant. Everyone check that out. And I didn't warn you about this, but we always tend to finish when I remember with the Oasis song of the guest choice. So is there a particular Oasis song that means a lot to you and any reason why?
Yeah, I kind of had myself braced, assuming there might be a bit of like top tracks and all that, right? So, I mean, when I think about my top three, It can sometimes change a little bit, but in my head, my top three in no order are Columbia, Slide Away, and for some reason, I absolutely love Rocking Chair. So even though I'm not necessarily saying it's definitely the best song, I'm going to vote for Rocking Chair because I just fucking love it. It's fun to play as well. But also, I just think Liam's vocal is absolutely superb on it.
It's so Rocking Chair, yeah,
great.
I love that song so much, and it's just like once again, it's another like B side that you know,
thrown away.
Hell? Just chuck it on a B side, yeah.
And I think it's because that epitomizes why you double fell in love with them, because you went, these guys are great. What the fuck is this? Like, you felt like you were finding like hidden fucking gold, you know. So yeah, rocking chair is my choice.
Brilliant. Well, Nico, much appreciated, mate. Very, really great to catch up. And yeah, we'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
Yeah, cheers man. See you again. And that is it.
And that is it.
All right, mate. See you later.
All the best, mate. Bye. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. As I said, it was a real pleasure to speak to Nico. Really good fun, great stories. What a top man. Do head over to Patreon and check out the Stupid Hearts Club. Give him a follow over there. Yeah, really good stuff. And as you heard on there, possibly me coming up as well, which would be very exciting. All right, that will do it for today. Thank you very much for listening. But most of all, thanks go to our patrons. You put your money where your mouth is. And it's greatly appreciated. You can become a patron at patreon.com/oasispod for as little as $1 per month or £1 a month. Both Matt Morgan and Nico charge £5 a month. So there you go. I'm a lot cheaper than they are. Do please follow me on social media at Oasis Podcast on Twitter and Facebook, Oasis Pod on Instagram. Feel free to drop me an email. I always love to hear from you. oasispod@gmail.com. Write a review where you can, or you can like podcasts on Spotify now and rank them and give them stars. So if you're on Spotify, then give me a star rating on that, 5 preferably. Give us a follow on YouTube, and I think that will just about do it. Yeah, stay in touch, stay engaged, and stay young.
Telluretic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is going to be fucking mega. Liam G's fucking car lighthouse. It's one of them, man. It just come to me. Fucking Sainsbury's car park. Bang. Right.
What exactly is a car lighthouse?
It's what it is, man. You know what I mean? It's an adhesive cone with, like, flashing light on it. Leave it on when you go shopping for trout or paper plates or whatever you're into, you know what I mean? If you don't want one, you know what I mean? Just don't fucking buy one, you know what I mean?
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.